You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 16 October. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we'll be chatting with Mia Kruger, market small caps, president's speech, and if we've got some time, we'll slip in Aspen. Errol Smart of Orion Minerals on their copper zinc mine in the Northern Cape as it gets a bankable feasibility study. We'll be chatting to Old Mutual on Visa as an investment case in an increasingly cashless society. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. PSG, we have already unlocked value with Capitec unbundling. And from Business Day, SA active funds underperform despite COVID-19 boosting market volatility. Morning markets overnight, the US was red, the S&P off 0.2%, the NASDAQ off 0.5%. Asia following with more red, Sydney's down 0.6% and Tokyo off 0.3%. Commodities also red, gold $1,910 an ounce, the rand at 16.67 against the US dollar, and top 40 opening call looking for a green open about a third of a percent up.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Mia Kruger. She is, of course, a director at Kruger International. Mia, appreciate your time this morning. We saw an really strong Adcock trading update yesterday. That pushed the stock up some 135%. End of September, we saw similar with Adaptite, and that stock's also up more than 100%. These small caps coming out with fairly good trading updates. I imagine there's a fair bit of mispriced small caps on the JSE, which offers potential. We've got to do some digging, got to do some homework, but they're there.
Absolutely. Morning, Simon. You're right. I think there's a big mispricing in the market here. We've seen a lot of the small caps especially, and then the mid caps too, being very very well priced. They're actually so cheap that they can't really get cheaper. Many of them do have issues. Obviously, they're all so exposed to the South African economy, which we know hasn't been in the best shape. Mm-hmm. And with yesterday's sort of announcement around the recovery plan, there is definitely hope, but there's a lot of talk and there's also a lot of hard work ahead to implement all of that. But just getting back to the small caps and the pricing, you know, I think it's very encouraging to read a trading update like we saw from Adcorp yesterday. And then, as you also mentioned, you know, we had some pretty good other updates as well. Adapt IT, we saw this strong rally in the share, but we should still need to remember that both these companies are still cheap at the levels that they're trading at this stage. So I like the fact that they were very good at containing their costs. They were both able to grow their earnings and their profits, and that's very encouraging. I think that there's definitely room for investment in the small to the mid-cap space locally.
Yeah, you make a great point there. Even after these moves, stocks such as Adcorp, Adapt IT, they're probably on forward PEs of about 4 or so, which is still incredibly cheap. You mentioned the president's speech yesterday. I mean, lots of great ideas, nothing wrong with those, of course. Minister Mboweni has to find the money for us, and then we need to execute. He was talking a lot around infrastructure talk, and certainly, I mean, there could be some opportunity there. I mean, you know, the ones that jump to mind is PPC, not without its risks. Afrimat, probably one of the best run companies on our market. Again, if this, even if only half of that infrastructure happens, some of our listed counters are going to benefit significantly.
Absolutely. You just nailed it on the head there. I think also when you look at the news, what we've seen out of the market over the last 2 weeks from Bolwin, it's also sort of captured this infrastructure spending and housing, etc. And they really, really on the forefront of that. And the share prices have been reflecting that. But like you say, I mean, it's really a tale of two different companies when you compare PPC and Afrimat in this, or you name them in the same sentence. You know, Afrimat is an exceptionally well-run business, and the share price reflects reflects that, where when you look at the PPC, we sit in a very difficult position. The company actually needs the equivalent of their market cap from shareholders to be invested into the company now to just save it from the massive debt pile that it sits with. So that they've got hard work ahead of them. And I mean, it's touch and go whether they will be making it as a company, which obviously I really hope they do. They're a long-standing South African company, and I hope that they will be able to reshuffle that debt of theirs in a way that, that shareholders are willing to give them more capital. Yeah, but there is definitely an opportunity for them, yes.
Yeah, you make the point. It is almost binary. They need to raise a lot of money, and I hope that PPC does keep going. The president also mentioned potentially listing SEOs, and a lot of people are like, "Oh, we don't want to own those." But I mean, truthfully, some of them aren't bad. It depends what they look like when they list, and particularly utilities as a concept for an investment philosophy. The right utility can be a great investment in a portfolio.
You're absolutely right. You know, I think when you consider utilities as an investment, it has a completely different earnings profile than your normal listed equities. So it's a great diversifier in a portfolio. It's a steady income stream. And those contracts of SOEs and of utilities are normally so binding that you can bank on the increases in those earnings year on year. So we've actually spoken about the fact that we've at Kruger International looked at investing into renewable infrastructure, renewable energy infrastructure, and we're actually concluding that deal this coming week. It's been hard work, but everyone in South Africa is looking at different areas of investing, alternative investments that we can actually all add to our portfolios, with the fact that we've seen such sort of lagging returns on the JSE, and the fact that we know that there is so much more risk in our bonds locally. So everyone's looking for different opportunities, and I think that this might just be a great new opportunity coming to the market that could sort of help with diversification and give you sort of a steady income stream.
Yeah, and the JSE would like some more activity. A quick last question. Aspen, I thought the results weren't bad when they came out, September. The market is not liking that stock, down sub 110 Rand. Price earnings, I mean, the forward PE is probably about 7. Surely opportunity here.
Yes, I mean, I'm with you here. I don't really understand why the market is so unhappy. What they've said the last couple of months, I mean, Stephen Sard has been very vocal around they've got a clear plan. It seems to me that they've got a clear plan. They've really gone and done hard work to reduce their debt. So they've done a lot of things. They've sold units where they, you know, mainly did that to reduce the debt. We know with about the thrombosis sale they did a couple of weeks ago. And the company, I think, is more focused now. So the share price is definitely not loved yet. So I think there is opportunity in a company like Aspen. Aspen is focused on emerging markets, which I think is a great place to be if you're in medicine and manufacturing medicine. And I think that there's opportunity in this company. Many of the big investors that hold Aspen still believe in the company, and they've been holding the company without selling their stakes, going through all these share price ups and downs. So that's also a good sign to me that when the long-term investors are still holding the company, you should know that this is still a company that probably offers you good value over the longer term.
Yeah, and of course, Stephen Sard and his team have a giant position there as well. Leave it there. Mia Kruger, Director of Kruger International, appreciate your early morning.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Errol Smart. He's Managing Director and CEO at Orion Minerals. You remember it was last week we were chatting with Simon Norton about zinc, and he dropped Orion Minerals. I went into digging, and now we've got the CEO on the line. Errol, morning. Appreciate your time. This is your copper zinc mine up in the Northern Cape. You've got a bankable feasibility study concluded. For us novices, that, to my understanding, is a fairly late stage in the process. What is next? Is it really just a case of getting the final stages of funding for that mine?
Hi, Simon. Yeah, it is the late stages. It's taken 5 years to get to where we've got to. although in the base metal industry, that's almost like record pace, because typically large base metal mines take anywhere between 12 and 20 years from the time they discovered to the time they developed. you know, it's been a challenge. Mm-hmm. Obviously, over the last 3 years, the South African regulatory environment has changed dramatically for the positive.
Mm-hmm.
So we did come in at the right time. We've got the first mover advantage, and now it is time for financing. So we are busy working intensely at the moment with the equity financing. You know, typically projects like this are financed on about 60% senior debt basis, and that's why you have to have a bankable feasibility mm-hmm. study. And the balance is funded by a combination of equity and offtake-related finance. In South Africa, we've actually got a better opportunity than most of Africa because we do have such a sophisticated finance market. So you've got things like lease finance and vendor supply, contractor supply finance, and that kind of thing, which changes the mix a little bit, makes it a little bit more complicated, but it gives the shareholder a much better outcome at the end of the day with a better leveraged investment.
Gotcha. That was going to be my question. You know, we, as South Africans, you know, mining sector's had a tough few decades, but we get mining. We're sort of used to it. Timelines to production. I mean, how long? I mean, you mentioned, you know, these things often run for decades from discovery to actually getting ore out of the ground. I mean, what would be your optimistic timeline to finally getting some zinc and copper to market?
Well, the BFS is based on quite conservatively a period of 30 months from mm-hmm. the time that we secure the financing to first sales, 33 months. We all pray that we can get the financing completed in the next 6 months or so. Obviously, Christmas is looming now, and
sure.
the whole COVID thing is still a bit of a distraction in getting your financing done. Because, sadly, you know, a lot of the financing is still going to have to come from offshore.
Yeah.
Because the South African equity investor, you know, junior mining is dead in South Africa. There aren't an investor class that invests in junior mining in South Africa. There's no analyst coverage. There's the wealth managers and the fund managers don't have it in their mandates. So we're going through a whole process of actually educating the investor market at the moment on what the opportunity is. Because the South African investor is used to just chasing a dividend yield, whereas junior mining around the world is driven by the alpha return. You know,
yeah.
you buy a stock for, you're seeking a 5 or 10 bagger. And we've started to swim a little bit upstream in South Africa. The foreigners love the project, but have had to get their heads around South Africa. And slowly but surely, they are getting their heads around South Africa, and South Africa is getting de-risked as an investment destination. The government is doing a lot of right things at all sorts of levels, everywhere from the DMR to Treasury to environmental affairs. All of those things is just an order of magnitude better than what it was 4 years ago when we came here.
Okay, that is great news, and I take your point. I mean, particularly in South Africa, I think we're deeply biased towards those precious metals, the gold, the PGMs, the diamonds, but those base metals, I mean, copper and zinc, I mean, huge industrial demand, copper in electric vehicles, and of course, just power distribution, zinc in construction and infrastructure. We're chatting with Mia Kruger around that, you know, potential infrastructure spend. These play straight into it. Junior mining, always risky, but always a space I like to keep an eye on. We'll leave that there. Errol Smart, he's Managing Director and CEO of Orion Minerals. Errol, appreciate your time.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Musa Hassim. He's an investment analyst at Old Mutual Wealth Private Client Securities. Musa, morning. Appreciate your time. We're talking about a visa, about cashless. What really struck me, you put a note out, one of the stats, 83% of global transactions are done via cash and check. I would never have imagined that. But one of the points of COVID, I imagine, is a lot more cashless transactions happening. I see a lot of stores I go to going cashless. The trend certainly is to less cash and more electronic, which plays perfectly into Visa and others, but their position in the cashless space.
Good morning, Simon. Yes, thank you for having me on the show. You're 100% correct. The COVID-related pandemic has definitely accelerated the move to a cashless society. And it's been a big catalyst for cashless transactions. In fact, at the outset of the pandemic, there were concerns that the virus could spread via cash, as cash is known to change hands frequently and can pick up bacteria and viruses and so forth. This has led to a number of governments taking precautionary measures, from completely destroying their notes to storing them in vaults before recirculating them back into the economies. It's also led to a number of retail outlets in various parts of the world not accepting cash and only using contactless payments, digital payments, to protect their customers and employees. And with many bank branches also closed, retail stores have had limited options for processing cash into their bank account. And they do not want to be left holding large amounts of cash that may be vulnerable to theft. So this has obviously been of benefit to digital payment facilitators like Visa, as people are now more likely to use their cards, whether that's check or credit, to make payments in store. And obviously a further driver for digital payments has been the adoption of e-commerce during the global pandemic. Due to various lockdown measures across the world, many individuals have resorted to online shopping as a necessity as opposed to a convenience. And there's been a number of reports now that have highlighted this. The latest one I've come across has stated that e-commerce growth has accelerated by 4 to 6 years, with total online spending up around 77% year-on-year. And these are phenomenal numbers. People are now a lot more comfortable shopping online and using digital payment methods in-store. And as a result, it's fair to assume that a lot of this behavioral shift to digital payments will, to some extent, be permanent. And obviously, this benefits the lives of a Visa.
Yeah, and I mean, we look at Visa, and we probably, I think, a lot of, you know, certainly I was thinking there's not much innovation here, but actually Visa in of itself and the others, it's a competitive space in this space, but there is a lot of innovation happening. I mean, they're doing a payment feature in Brazil which enables you to make payments via WhatsApp with Visa. So there's a lot of innovation happening, and one of the beauties of a product like this is every time I use my card, every time I tap, whether it be an online, whether it be in store, Visa takes a small little royalty, and it might be small, but there are billions of those transactions happening every single day.
Exactly, Simon. So it's important to understand that the move to a cashless society has been in the making for a lot longer than we may initially think. Mm-hmm. At a global level, cashless transactions have been growing at close to around 11% between 2013 and 2017. With estimates indicating that this rate is likely to accelerate going forward as card and digital penetration increases across developing nations. And a big part of this growth has been the push by digital payment providers like Visa, ensuring that they are available at every point where you could possibly make a purchase. And I'm not only talking about the stores where you buy things, I'm also referring to the method you choose to make your payment. Sure, Visa could have just leveraged their network and continued to grow passively as people shift to use cards. Mm-hmm. Instead, Visa has innovated to ensure faster growth. They've made it easier for individuals to make payments by using smartphone technology, QR codes, contactless payments, and various other initiatives. All of these has allowed Visa to grow phenomenally. Payments on their network, as you said, has grown spectacularly, and it's grown about 14% per year over the past 11 years. Almost 180 billion transactions in 2019. And as I mentioned in my note, this worked out to around 25 transactions processed for every person on the planet, which is no small feat, to say the least. So it's clear that Visa has innovated to ensure they remain relevant and to capture more market share in the past.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, you make a point there I hadn't even thought of. When I use my SnapScan, for example, actually, the card at the back end is a Visa card, so I'm using SnapScan, but Visa still grabs a small slice of that down the line.
Exactly. We don't think of all the places that Visa actually plugs into. In your SnapScan, when you load your card onto Uber, when you're taking an Uber trip, Visa's earning a fee. They're plugging into Zapper, PayPal, even your smartphone-based payments like Apple Pay and Google Pay. All of these payments are routed through Visa's network, and the company earns a fee on every transaction.
The more I think about it, the more I think this is an astounding business model. We'll leave that there. Mr. Haseem, investment analyst at Old Mutual Wealth Private Client Securities. Talking Visa, as you run down that rabbit hole, you just see how ubiquitous it is in our life. Mr., appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning at 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website or the app, podcast on the website, the app, or wherever good podcasts are found. That available from 7 a.m. Chat to us on the social media, hashtag MoneyWebNow. Massive thanks to my team, Eddie, Cordora, Masekla, for getting us through the week. To you for listening, to my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWebNow. We'll chat again Monday.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.